Dinner time, it's where little moments are cherished. With Blue Cash Preferred, get 6% cash back at U.S. supermarkets and bring everyone together. I did say everyone. Learn more at americanexpress.com/explore-bcp. Terms and cashback cap apply with Blue Cash Preferred.
It's a brand new best podcast in baseball, and Jeff Gordon is back at the mic to talk about all the fans who weren't back at the ballpark, prompting him to capture it like this.
You feel better after having one of those rants because it's just so exasperating to go to that park and see it in that condition. It's just sad. It's not my, I mean, I'm not a shareholder in the team or anything, but it's just, you know, it was fun being around a franchise that was special. It's just, you know, we're lucky to be in a sports town where that happened.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see this, you know, we've had some darker times as a sports community, but I'd hate to see it go that way in baseball though, because that's just, yeah, you know, there goes 6 months of your life every year. That's just not very much fun.
We also talk about what the Cardinals can learn from the Pirates, how close they are to the Pirates, and if on the spectrum of contending, they're closer to the Rockies and the Pirates or to the Cubs and Yankees. The answer might surprise you, but how they get out of there is obvious. Whether or not they do it is less so.
It's a brand new BPIB. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by Instant Offense, my colleague, St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist and tip sheet author. Is that like kind of best-selling author? Because you're in all the papers. So it's like one of the longest-running column features in the country, right, Jeff Gordon?
Yeah, and it's kind of evolved into being more of a topical item. Back in the day when you could just have fun with it and have a fun item, that was, a lot of papers were doing that, a lot of outlets. But now it's more just topical, what's going on, what are people saying about each sport, particularly if it, you know, involves one of the local teams. So, yeah, just kind of giving sort of some content to supplement all the great work that our beat reporters do, and just trying to keep people on top of what's going on out there.
That's good. That is something that is kind of been lost from modern newspapers, right? Or I guess it's not lost, more like it's evolved, is that page to column, right? Used to be kind of the snarky quick hits, TJ Simers, real kind of skewering, funny, all those things, column that you wrote and Dan O'Neill wrote for the Post-Dispatch. Those have kind of changed and not been as much a feature of the paper. Is that because they're just everywhere online?
Yeah, I think it evolved. You know, the whole world, Twitter became the source of a lot of that, of course, over time. But, you know, it's a good question. I mean, back in the day, I was part of over at Fox Sports, they had a thing called Funhouse. And we got people like Dane Perry, probably familiar with his work as a ball writer. He was a stalwart.
He's been a guest on this podcast.
You know, next time you have him, ask him about those Fox Funhouse days 100 years ago. We had a blast. But, and there was page two at ESPN.com and so forth. It was a thing. You know, Bill Schaft, a great writer for David Letterman, would do a bit over there. Hunter Thompson had a column. It was really cool. But no, it just evolved into the media changes, and we're all in the business of trying to win the information battle, really, and hold people's attention that way. And so it's kind of lost, and people have to take their shots other ways.
It's fascinating. All right. Well, you were at the ballpark this past week as the Cardinals hosted the Pirates for four games. That made you one of the few who went to the ballpark. What do you make of the attendance, Jeff? Let's just jump right in. You know, where's your view of it? How do you process it? And what level of DEFCON do you put it at for the Cardinals when it comes to them reclaiming their brand and bringing fans back to the ballpark?
Yeah, well, the nuclear bomb hasn't quite been dropped, but it starts to feel that way. I thought the fan base here would diminish, but I also thought the fan base here was more durable. You know, we always talk about how baseball was part of culture here. It was a fabric of life for the whole region, really. It was a big part of what people did in the summer. One way or the other, baseball was a big thing. And I know so many people that still feel that way. But, you know, a lot of those folks have become disillusioned, and, you know, the world changes and the consumers change, and you know, new, the next generation's different. All these things are true. But what's still shocking is that a market that overperformed for decades really just would have fallen to this sort of shape. And I reflected on seeing this in other places, like, you know, my beloved Tigers growing up and how they went through dark times. And the Royals were a model franchise until they weren't. And the Orioles had a magical sense about them until they didn't. And now I wonder, is this going to happen to the Cardinals?
Yeah, and what would that mean? I mean, you were here through some slim days, some trying times. There is this similar? Do you see a similar outline of events as in the 1990s, or worse?
Yeah, and this is shocking because I go back to when I was in college, and it's 100 years ago, or actually just in the 70s, but pretty close. Coming over to Busch Stadium on a Sunday afternoon, and it looked a lot like Busch Stadium. This version of Busch Stadium looks this season, nobody there. And that was like 1978 or so. I was just shocked at what was happening, you know, over here. And the Royals were a lot more fun to go to. You know, their stadium was full of life and energy and fans. And then Whitey Ball came along and changed everything here. And since then, with the exception of maybe saw a bit of a lull in the 90s when the Brewery lost interest in the team, this has been pretty amazing. You know, from Whitey Ball till through 2023, the support level was just stunningly good for a market this size. Now, I don't know. It's a good question because so many things are coming into play at the same time, Derek, and we've talked about it all summer. You know, fans are different. The next generation's different. The world's changed. But also the circumstances. You know, you could have a work stoppage. You know, we came out of the pandemic in pretty good shape. People came back to the ballpark. But now what happens? You know, going forward, and you've got a team that may not be back in the chase for a bit, unless the ownership and the management decides that they need to change that and become more like the Brewers and take a run at it.
Jeff, do you think that the crowd size you're describing in the 1970s was just because of disinterest? Like just whether there was other stuff to do or the Cardinals just weren't all that interesting to fans?
Well, you know, you had such a glorious run of all those great players and, you know, and then things fall off. Some trades don't work out, and the team just kind of falls into a malaise. And it was a down cycle. But it reminds you that a down cycle in a smaller market, you know, the bad combination. And then, you know, all the energy of Whitey Ball and all that followed. And, you know, McGuire Mania kind of got things back on track. And then, of course, the great run of teams with La Russa managing some, you know, really outstanding teams with Destin Hall of Famers. And even then, even the teens – with the exception of the lull at the end of the Hatgate thing, some pretty good teams. And then, again, even 2022, that was so much fun when that team caught fire and Albert came back. And it looked, they had three guys hitting at an MVP level at the end of the season until they weren't. So, you know, just think about all that. And, yeah, it's cyclical and there's ups and downs in any business. But it's still shocking to go from – you know, expecting 35,000 people on a Tuesday night to 18.
Oh yeah, no, and it's not a very pleasant schedule next year either. The 2026 Cardinals schedule with only one homestand in September, no holiday games. It's not setting up for a very appealing schedule, even for the casual fan, let alone the devoted fan. So, you know, I mean, I guess the Red Sox come to town, but even the Yankees don't come to town. So, you know, there's not really that vibe that you get and excitement that even you get from looking ahead to 2026, which brings me to like kind of the crux of this question, Jeff. And you talk about the 70s, you talk about the 80s, you know, that little downturn in the 90s and really what it's been since. And I wonder, Jeff, if you look at these crowds and you go, oh, these empty seats, that's apathy. Or do you go, oh, these empty seats, that's anger. Is this a protest crowd?
Yeah, I mean, you know, apathy blends to anger, but even apathy is enough to make you not want to spend all that money.
Well, apathy is worse than anger. Apathy, I think, is worse than anger. Yeah. Apathy, you have to restart their interest and that they care at all. Like if someone becomes apathetic to a team, I was always kind of, you know, being around sports and all that stuff, is either told or you kind of experience that, man, the worst thing that can happen is just apathy. If they're mad at the team, at least they care. at least they want to be there, and they're saying, no, no, give us something better.
That's a great point, because if you're angry, at least you're paying attention. If you're you may not notice that the things are actually getting better because you've tuned it out and moved on. You know, and how many people have moved on, and how many of those people are angry but will come back because it's still a part of who they are and what they like in life and what's important to them. So, you know, you still it's tough. And, you know, you're at a time when with all this evolution of what's happening in the world, you have to be on your game if you're running a sports franchise, because there's so many things for people to do, so many ways for people to consume sports, and then so many challenges to getting the product to people in a way that they can digest through whatever streaming method they have. I mean, this is a very dynamic time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sports betting is great. It's going to be revenue, and high-end fantasy is great because it engages some people. All those are also, but really the bread and butter fans of people taking their families to the game, you know, start losing those people, and the kids don't grow up coming to the game, and they don't, it's not a part of what they are. They do. They're not taking their glove to the game. They're not, you know, buying the stuff of the players, merchandise. Mm-hmm. Man, like to your point, how do you get them back?
Do you think there's a modernization, a modern equivalent of Whitey Ball that could reengage the fans? Do you think there is some, if that's the most recent lesson of how the Cardinals reinvigorated the fan base, though I guess McGuire would be in there too, but I'm not sure that there's the modern equivalent of McGuire out there, but is there a modern equivalent of Whitey Ball that could reinvigorate, re-spark interest? That notion that it's a style of play, that it's a gunslinger kind of attitude towards transactions and trades?
Yeah, through all of it, and style of play, which certainly even with this team, Ollie and his staff have tried to do that. Not a mm-hmm. lot of speed beyond Victor Scott, but still they try to be aggressive, probably a little too aggressive against the Pirates, getting a couple rundown scenarios. But, yeah, you know, all of those things, right? So how do you come up with something that's dynamic? We've talked about the ballpark experience. It's stale. You talk about the messaging from management. It's non-existent or worse. And so all of it, you have to have all of these things operating at a high level. You're going to have strong messaging, a commitment to succeeding. You can't sell your past, you know, as the anchor of your business plan. It's great to have it. It'll always mm-hmm. be part of what you are, makes you special. But then the style of play, your way you're attacking each season, you've got to project yourself as trying every year, being resourceful, doing the sorts of things the Brewers do, the things that the Rays did over the years, other franchises, and get dynamic personalities if you can. And there are some guys with that potential. And it's just a mix of all of these things. It's going to take all of it. Personalities on the team, style of play, how it's being messaged, the commitment level, I'm not sure you don't have to go crazy like the Pirates, or rather the Padres, with all the spending and all the maneuvers and making a new team every year. I don't think you have to go quite that far in this market, but some of that would be good. And a lot of what Milwaukee does would be great.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Milwaukee, right? Okay. So Milwaukee would be a model for the Cardinals. Our colleague Lynn Worthy made the comparison with the Detroit Tigers, who you know well. It's not really a case where, you know, the Padres are going to be what the Cardinals follow, but certainly they could learn something from that ballpark and what's going on there. Even if they can't recreate the city or the geographic location, there's still some things that can be learned from Petco Park and all the features and just the in-game entertainment that they have going there. I think, you know, there's a lot to be drawn, but, you know, the Brewers have Christian Yelich and Jackson Churio when healthy. Yelich is a bona fide star. You know, Jackson Churio could be. The Padres have Manny Machado, a bona fide star. Your Tigers, well, they got Skubal, right? A bona fide star every fifth day. The Pirates have a two-time All-Star already. He's not even two seasons into his career, and he's a two-time All-Star in Paul Skeens. And yet, like, his games, when I covered one of his starts there against the Cardinals, it didn't fill the ballpark. Where do stars fit into the notion of bringing people to the ballpark? Does it have to happen and coincide with winning? Does it have to happen and coincide with personality, Jeff? And can the do the Cardinals have that? I mean, when you look at Mason Winn and J.J. Weatherholt, promoting a middle infield like that, you kind of see a faint outline of how it'd be similar to Whitey Ball. That might be the modern equivalent of Whitey Ball.
It could, you know, and I always go back to Trammell and Whitaker, and the Tigers had a good run, a good period of time with those guys in the Keystone. You know, I think it's unless you have a guy doing something unique like McGuire, where it was just he was the show, people came to watch him hit, and the team wasn't great, but it was a compelling show, and it was worth everybody's attention. You don't have that guy or a Bo Jackson when he came over to the Royals, you know, just people showing up just to watch him hit batting practice because it was such a show. But you can have dynamic players. You can have good players, very good players. Now, are you going to get the guys, you know, racking up huge WAR? You know, those guys are hard to find. You know, Cardinals get accused of, well, you haven't developed a superstar. Well, guess what? That's pretty much what every team says. You know, there's a handful of them out there that are really above everybody else. And they've had a bunch of guys who've had good seasons, but obviously they haven't gotten the next Albert. Well, guess what? There was only one of them.
Right.
So you can't count on that. It's one element that's great if you've got guys who are good players, very good players, even stars who also project well. It's got to be everything, though. It's got to be a belief that, you know, this is important, that this franchise is important, that it's special. How do you get back for decades? Cardinal fans believed that their team was special, their franchise was special. The history was special. The consistent success was special. Their support of the team was special. They helped us, that franchise earn that status by going to the game. They felt entitled to keep going. You know, we often say the fans are spoiled, and the pushback I get is like, yeah, well, we're buying tickets all that time. We're showing up on a Tuesday night, you know, filling up the place. Nobody else is doing that around baseball. You know, we earned this. And, you know, they did. So how do you get them back? How do you get that dynamic back? And I think it's going to start with the people at the top have to project the right, this is what we're doing. This is a vision we have. And go from there.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. You know, that the Cardinals fans invested in the team and felt invested in the team. And when the team is adrift, they wonder about their investment like any other investor would when a product starts to go in decline, right? I mean, there is a real element of that where, you know, the fans felt that they were putting in, and so they got to take the enjoyment out. That was the thrill. You're right. They got something special for it, which was contending beyond their market size, spending beyond their market size, stars beyond their market size, and keeping stars for years. You said it so well, Jeff. They, you know, they helped create something special just as they got to benefit from something special. And I think it's fair to wonder whether or not that's going to be possible in the modern game. You know, there is another team that saw, like, you know, a quick rise, contention, stars, and then had a downturn in attendance and had some years of struggle. And this is pretty recent. You know, that's the Phillies. The Phillies went through that. You know, they had their strong core. They invested in it. Some of those players got older. Injuries happened. They weren't performing as they had been. You know, the Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard. The Cardinals helped bring an end to that. You know, well, actually not helped. The Cardinals brought an end to that run. When you think about the 1-0 game that Chris Carpenter pitched in 2011 against the Phillies and Ryan Howard being the final out there. And the Phillies had to reinvigorate that. And now you look at a place, I mean, watch last night, obviously history was made with Kyle Schwarber hitting 4 home runs there, but every night is like an event there. It's just amazing. The place just throbs and pulses with interaction between this team that's beloved, this ballpark that has kind of found its voice, and the quality of talent on the field. You know, for the Cardinals to recreate that recovery, I don't know. I mean, the Phillies had some misses on trades. Phillies had some misses there. But you know what the Phillies have done that it's just hard to see the Cardinals doing on the horizon, Jeff? And that's spend. You know, are they going to go get the 2 years from now's equivalent of Trey Turner? Are they going to sign Kyle Schwarber? You know, they had their chance to get Wheeler, and they sided with, you know, picking or keeping outfielders who they have since lost. So, I mean, are they going to make that kind of deal? I mean, the Phillies spent to reinvigorate and it got there and now look what they have. But I'm not sure that's the path the Cardinals will take. I don't think it will be.
Right. I think when you look at the Phillies, you had an owner, a managing partner that said, you know what, I'm tired of this mediocrity.
Yeah.
And I'm done with it. And then he was willing to listen to the Scott Boras pitch of, okay, you bring in a real star. It's transformational for your franchise. You can monetize it and change your entire picture by doing this. And he gave the, you know, it's not a slideshow anymore. It's more sophisticated than that, of course. But Boras convinced them that, okay, this is, you go this route, you, and especially a market of that size with the fan base that's hungry for success, and you can make this worth your while. This ridiculous contract that I'm going to convince you to sign is going to change your franchise. You know what? It did. Now, that doesn't always work. DeWitt's never going to build DeWitt. He's never going to listen to a Scott Boras pitch and oh, he'll listen, but he won't act on it.
Well, I mean, they got the same one, right? I mean, like Bryce Harper, you know, the Boras and his group were trying to tell the Cardinals, look, you can be in this thing. Like what he's looking for, you can make a play for it. It's not a coast thing. It's not a big market thing. It's a baseball market thing. And don't discount the quality of your pitch to him. And the Cardinals made the trade for Paul Goldschmidt and kind of faded from that conversation.
Yeah, they were, you know, it's hard to imagine this owner going to the extremes, you know, the same with the late owner of the Padres going to that extremes, you know, getting guys contracts or lifetime deals. I don't think this ownership does that. Now, can you succeed without doing that? Or is it going to take an owner at some point buying the team that's got ridiculous money? They can play the Cohen game, you know, is that what it would take? Or is there another way to succeed? And, you know, I think you're better off trying to do it another way, just knowing that some of those contracts would be disastrous too. And just ask, you know, of course, nobody's as dumb as the Rockies, but, you know, the ghost of Chris Bryant for all that money, you know, that sort of thing happens as well out there in the marketplace. They're not going to – it's not always the answer, but often it is. But so if you can't do that, and with this ownership you won't, then what do you do? And the thing I keep coming back to is – and it's great that they've got some young players coming up now that they've drafted and maybe a couple out of the international ranks as well. Mm-hmm. But, man, their failure there. Carlos Martinez, he could have been something. Carlos could have been something. Yeah, Oscar Tavares, he could have been something. It's tragic for both of them, really. You know, not obviously more so for Oscar, but, you know, Carlos, he lost what he could have done with his career if he had, it's a shame. But, you know, you got that. There's so much dynamic talent coming out of some of these places. That's so perplexing. That's just been such a big failure, especially the market to size. You're going to have to find guys. Mm-hmm. You got to go get an Ellie De La Cruz. You know, you got to go find that guy to invest the money on that top prospect. If you can find that guy, it makes such a difference. I mean, look at some of these guys. So even O'Neill Cruz, I'm not sure he's going to make it as a great player. If he'll be a superstar, but man, you pay attention when he's out there.
He
gives your team a different look. So if you can hit in that area and maybe not have to go out and get a guy, sign him to a Kyle Tucker when he's 30 years old, maybe that's the path for this franchise.
You mentioned a player from the Pirates, O'Neill Cruz. You mentioned the Rockies and the mistakes they've made. And you're right, the big contract that they put out there to Chris Bryant for I don't know what reason, when they didn't keep Nolan Arenado, for example. But those are two of the teams that the Cardinals have hosted in the past four home series. They had the Cubs come to town, then the Rockies, then the Yankees, and then the Pirates. That's been this past month of home series. Jeff, I'm real curious. I asked Chatters this the other day, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, and I'll expand it to those four. All right, so Cubs, Rockies, Yankees, and Pirates. Of those four, where are the Cardinals? Where do they fit in the spectrum of contention? If you were to put those five teams, the four visitors and the Cardinals, on a spectrum of contention, you know, left to right, you know, far away to closest to contention, where would they all fit?
Yeah, fans complain about being in the mushy middle, and that's, and teams complain about being in the mushy
middle. They've been there for almost 10 years.
Yeah. So now you appreciate having the if the mushy middle means that you slide into the playoffs and that's as far as you get, boy, it looks better than this. But, you're stuck in the middle. Now, can you get to the high side of the mushy middle and move closer and then maybe have a magical Nationals-like run? Or what the Brewers are doing this year, which could be a Nationals-like run. I guess that would be the wish, because you could do that on a budget. But you're stuck in the middle. And if you're stuck in the middle, I think it's better than just deliberately losing and setting records like the White Sox and the Rockies. But although the Rockies fans, I know Rockies fans, and you feel that's your world. It's such a great ballpark and such a great atmosphere and such a great neighborhood that people show up anyways. That's not going to be the case here. So you're just stuck. You're stuck in the middle, and you don't want to. As I wrote about, DeWitt never wanted to go into deliberate losing. Never wanted to go that route because it's bad business. Never mind that he likes the sport, which he does, but it's horrible business. Well, inadvertently, they're perilously close to being in that spot, being on the lower part of that middle, and just being dull and mediocre and frustrating.
Yeah. So you have the Rockies farthest from contention, right? The Pirates. Are the Pirates closer to the Cardinals or closer to the Rockies?
Well, look, the Pirates could go out next year and make three moves. Just maybe four moves to get solid offense, and build around their pitching, and they could hang around for sure with that pitching. But they get their guys off the injured list, and guy like Chandler getting them up to speed as a starter, and you look at what they've got. My goodness. You could get there, and you may have to trade one of those younger pitchers in there to get something and spend some money and just find some value. Just go out and find it, solid guys. And when you're just dead last in offense, at least until recently, they were just not. It's so awful. They have so much pitching in such a just god awful offense. Now they played better after the managerial change. I think with three or four moves, they could blast past the Cardinals, and they and the Reds would be, knocking on the door to see if they can't get a wild card spot.
I think if you took the Pirates roster and the Orioles roster, you'd have a heck of a team.
Yeah, and by the way, first of all, I apologize for being optimistic.
Let's talk about fusion. Let's talk about fusion. Yeah, let's bring those two teams together. They can split the years, They'd make for a heck of a team.
Yeah, I was all the things that went wrong with the Orioles pitching, I did not foresee that when I thought they had a chance to be good this year. So I regret that. But, a lot of talent. And again, they got a guy who's a good prospect. Let's go ahead and sign him for a million years.
Yeah.
Who knows? We think he can play. But, we're not going to worry about him until 2031 or whatever it is.
At a position that they have covered by one of their best players. It's fascinating. Yeah. So then the other end of the spectrum, Yankees or the Cubs closest to contending in your view? Not in the standings, but in your view.
Yeah, because the Yankees can always fix what's gone wrong. And really the Cubs could too, but the Yankees are more inclined to do so because of just the culture of the franchise and the fact it's been so long since they've been able to do what they did back in their glory days. They're always in it. I think they have the capacity to outspend and the willingness to outspend their problems. Where the Cubs have been weirdly, as we've talked about many times, weirdly unwilling to go all in, and they're being very guarded about this measured buildup. Mm-hmm. And it's a good group, and that's great. And someday it'll arrive. But the Yankees can go out and try to fix it the next year, and the next year, and the next year, play the Padres game.
So that puts the Cardinals, as you said, in the middle. But they're in the middle of two familiar teams, the Cubs and the Pirates. All right, well, then which side of the middle are they leaning towards? Are they closer to the Cubs on this, or are they closer to the Pirates?
Yeah, it's a great question because the Pirates have strength in one area, which is amazing. And I think that's the Cubs, I think, are well-positioned. I think they've been – by being careful and not spending their assets, I think they're going to be formidable. I think this team's probably closer to the Pirates because the Pirates might pass them next year. If they can make a handful of moves to improve their offense. The Cardinals have a really – what's frustrating is they've got a good base of position players, on making very little money, and from that you should be able to assemble a competitive team. It's a pitching, obviously a huge problem with that when all their guys got hurt. How do you leverage your strength, which is, you know, a decent base of position players that are not costing you a lot of money, deal with your couple of bad contracts? What do you do going forward? Can you compete next year knowing that you have a couple of bad contracts to eat in some fashion? I don't know. I mean, you need four or five pitchers. And so at the end of the day, you know, you're in a tough spot. You know, the Padres could pass you. I mean, the Pirates could pass you. I think maybe closer to the Rockies in some ways, which is sad.
Oof. Wow. All right.
The thing is, all those young position players, and I'm very positive about a lot of these guys, none of them are stars. Maybe Mason Winn. A lot of them could be good players. But as you hear from your chatters when you're in there, yeah, how many of these guys are really going to make a difference? They're good enough to play. A lot of two hitters, a lot of seven, eight hitters, six hitters. But what about that middle?
I mean, J.J. Weatherholt looks to be real, right? He stands out as a prospect like the Cardinals have not had as far as the hitter in a long time. You know, and does it translate up? You know, what he's done that some of the more recent guys to be considered the top prospects for the Cardinals, the Jordan Walkers and all that stuff, is he's really only gotten better at AAA. You know, a lot of them have that breakout AA year that goes, oh, okay, this is what it's like. This is what they can do in the Texas League. All right, this is strong. Colby Rasmus had that. You know, Oscar Tavares, the late Oscar Tavares, had that. Jordan Walker certainly had that. Matt Adams, Colton Wong. You can go down through the list. You know, those guys, it's like, okay, all right, yeah, there's something there. That's a prospect. That's a highly rated prospect. And then you go like, okay, what do they do at AAA? And goodness, Weatherholt has only amplified his production. It's like the better the competition has gotten, the better he's gotten. And that really projects well for, obviously it does. I mean, just the way I put it, I mean, this isn't like some secret sauce. That projects well for the majors. So is he that guy? He could be. You know, that's certainly something like for them to consider. They don't have the Bubba Chandler coming up. They hope they do in Doyle, you know, their recent pick, their fifth overall pick in the recent draft. We'll see. But I really wonder how much the Cardinals can really draw or how much Cardinal fans can really compare with the Pirates and the Cardinals. I think the Pirates too often, you know, just plop back down into their perpetual rebuild. You know, and it's like you're watching them. I got to be honest, watching the Pirates and watching Bubba Chandler, very impressive. But watching him do that, you can't help yourself but go, man, what team is going to get him? As opposed to how are the Pirates are going to trade or keep him and how good the Pirates are going to be. There's just like that feel when you watch the Pirates about like, oh, man, they have a lot of talent. I wonder who's going to benefit from this. You know, and never once you go, man, they have a lot of talent. Man, the Pirates are on the rise, and look what they could do with it. It just doesn't feel that way anymore. And what happens if that becomes the Cardinals, Jeff? If they're the 6-year cycle, the farm system for others.
Yeah, there's of course two pieces of that. One in Pittsburgh is owner.
You don't sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah, he owner does not care, and just the way he runs his businesses, he just does not care. He can make money by just sitting on the revenue sharing money, and he could just. As far as he's concerned, the stadium is just a TV studio. He's fine. Until that changes, you know that's a problem. And the other thing is they frankly just haven't been smart enough. You know, when you're in that situation, you've got to be really smart. And they haven't been. They haven't modeled the Rays. They haven't modeled the Brewers. So the combination of not being very smart in the front office and just having an owner who does not care, bad combination. Now, come to St. Louis. You hope Chaim Bloom is that guy. He's worked in these scenarios where the ownership has had a budget. He's been resourceful. He understands that part of it. I think he knows you got to look under rocks and you got to take chances and you got to aim high and scout and scour or other organizations for that missing piece that maybe you can do something with.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of confidence that maybe he can be the guy, or that he definitely can be the guy. Then it comes down to ownership. I mean, so the DeWitts, what do? Do you point to the attendance and now we're a different team, we're just going to have to be a small market team and that's life? Or do you point to the attendance and say, well, we have to spend money to make money? Which way is it going to be? And we'll find out soon enough where the commitment level is. You know, deficit spending has not been anything he's wanted to do. You know, he ate some during the pandemic like they all did from an ownership standpoint. But I think there's confidence that Bloom will do good things. Is there any confidence that DeWitt will make the commitment that he needs to at this critical time in the franchise's history, where you look around and you see what happens when how great franchises can go horribly wrong? Do you want to be that, follow that model? You look at some of these attendance swings, and again, in places like Detroit, you know, I mean, all the way to nothing, and then now they're filled up again, but they went through that period of, you know, 1.4 million. It was crazy.
Great. I mean, there's a lot. It's a pretty strong comparison, man, when you think about it. Like Detroit, right? I mean, their owner was willing to spend. I mean, that's a team that did have big contracts, right? Dave Dombrowski was there. You know, I don't think anyone would confuse the way Dave Dombrowski builds a team with what the Cardinals expect Haim Bloom to do. But, you know, there was spending there. I mean, the Cardinals have spent to keep their players. So, you know, I mean, the comparison does have some validity. I think that, you know, that there appears to be, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong or chime in, but there appears to be two ways the Cardinals kind of have to get their groove back. One is they need to be more self-reliant on the players who contribute at the edges and contribute on a daily basis. They need to find ways to then have a few of those emerge as impact. If they can get one impact starter who they is homegrown, who then they sign, that would be huge. If they can get one impact hitter who they drafted or signed and he arrives and they keep for his career, for the first decade of his career, that would be huge. But even that alone isn't enough to kind of reinvigorate everything. It's hard to say they can't do it without some sort of spending on the free agent market. That's just the homegrown complete teams that go out and contend. They just aren't able to keep up. I mean, even the Brewers aren't really that. I did look recently. I thought it was really interesting that the Cardinals in this transition / retool / not rebuild year, you compare their rookie production to the Brewers in a contending, we're going to go for the World Series year. And it's not even close. The Brewers have remarkable rookies contributing. They've arrived. They've contributed. I mean, it is very similar to like what the Cardinals had 10, 15 years ago. These guys would arrive and they contribute and they would stand out. The Brewers have done it via trade and via identifying talent that can help them, everything like that. The quickest way back to kind of reinvigorating things is once you have this farm system in place and how quickly they can do that, is it seems like you have to spend on top of it to accelerate that. That if you sit around and you wait for all the pieces to come together in some sort of homegrown perfect storm, you're going to be the Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you're the Cardinals, you're not going to sign certain things you're not going to chase, like the top of the very, very top of the pitching market. But if you can make quality additions, like Sonny Gray, good example, quality addition. He's not a superstar. He's late in life. That $35 million or whatever next year looks a little tough. But he's a quality player. You know, if he could spend at that level and get multiple quality players versus winning the high stakes for the next, when Paul Skenes hits the market and when he's going to get the $1 trillion contract from the Dodgers or whatever, you're never going to go there. You're never going to get those guys. That's not happening. But you can get really good players. The key is, as we've said many times over the years, where they've failed is spending a fair amount of money on a guy that's just replacement level, or worse, you know, the Cecil's and those sorts of things.
I mean, there's something about it, Jeff, where you could go, and when you go to spending, you could go to the lottery spending. You know, some of what they have been willing to spend on is the sure thing, right? Like, they know what Sonny Gray is. He's got a track record, all that stuff. Some of their other spending, Brett Cecil might be a bad example just because of how strange the, you know, and unfortunate and all the other events that surrounded him as he struggled either with injury or he had, you know, some real family emergencies that took him away from the team and everything. So that might be like an odd example, but Mike Leake is another, you know, they were able to spend on Mike Leake. They knew what Mike Leake was. They had a bad read on how he would fit with the team, but they knew what he was, what kind of pitcher he was, what he was going to be, and he was that. What the Cardinals have not spent on, you know, is the high dollar guy who might be a risk. You know, the number of those guys are growing where you think about, like, all right, well, look at how it caught the Arizona Diamondbacks. They spent big on pitching, right? But there were some risks involved there. No, there weren't certainties, but they spent big on the potential upside of those pitchers, and they got caught. You know, injuries happen. The Cardinals have been really risk-averse when it comes to that. They just talk themselves out of it or don't like the models of it. And so, like a Nathan Eovaldi, they're not going to sign that guy. We'll see if there's a pivot there. And I'm really eager to see if maybe that's where Chaim Bloom pivots, is that he's willing to make a risk or make a move like that that has tremendous upside, and the downside is that it costs money for no contribution.
Well, they're going to have to, they frankly have to do some of that because of the just the way the team is setting up for next year.
Great point.
You're going to be able to trade a few of these guys and get some pitching back, but are you going to get a 14-game winner in exchange for, you know, Brendan Donovan or whatever? Unlikely. So yeah, you're gonna have moves to make. But I go back to, like, I do think there's been a vision to go for higher ceiling guys. I think Randy Flores has done a good job there. You've aimed high, and some of that might pay off. I mean, I look at a guy like Joshua Baez, 4 years in, drafted as a high ceiling guy, 17 years old. He's a monster, a gigantic arm, runs like the wind. He's just a beast. Spent 4 years, can't hit a baseball. That's the problem. Learns to hit a baseball. Now he's got, you know, OPS over 800, hit at two levels, 47 stolen bases, and he's gigantic. Can he learn to play baseball at the level that, you know, can get to the big leagues? Can he hit well enough to get to the big leagues? He's an absolute beast. Well, this is a guy, Liam Doyle, high ceiling guy. You know, he's a maniac, throws a million miles an hour. You know, he matured in his last year of college. He's going to be require some work. But there's a high ceiling there. You're going. Who's the refresh my memory? The outfielder they took, was it fifth round?
Chase Davis. Oh, outfielder.
Yeah, no, well, he's first round. He's not quite making. Yeah. He's more of the polished college hitter. The guy they just drafted, who's a shortstop, they project him as an outfielder. He's a speed guy, fifth round.
Oh, pick. From Memphis.
Yeah,
right?
Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That is the kind of guy. You look at the tool set there. You know, he can run. He's got a nice swing as a high school player. He's just a kid. He's an athlete. You're trying to make a 4-year play on that. And then 4 years, you want a player there. That's the scouts liked that pick because it was high ceiling. They got away from just going for the more polished college guys that could produce readily and fill in, which worked well in the teens. All those guys, all the Alan Craig types that came in and contributed I think they've tried to aim high. I think they did with, you know, Gorman's power, Walker's upside. Going for some high school guys versus the college guys. I think you just have to stay down that road, aim, do everything you can to go for high ceiling guys. Take some risk in the draft, take some risk in international, which they've done and had mixed results. But this is where I think you can make some long-term gains to try to find that guy, that juice, that extra. You know, it's great that you get drafted an Alec Burleson, who's a good, you know, bat-to-ball guy, a real ball player. He's going to be on your team for a while. That's a great get where they drafted him. Great. And just keep going with that. But also, can you find that monster? Can you find it? Could Baez someday be Churio? Is it possible? You put that on him. Well, I mean, when he was drafted, they had those hopes.
Yeah.
4 years of not hitting, kind of chilled those hopes.
Yeah.
But now, at least at the double A level, that to your point, now he gets a triple A, he might fall through the floor.
Right. And 390 on base average this month. You threw me a little bit there because so the Cardinals had a shortstop, center fielder now, in Pedro Strop's son, former reliever there for the Cubs, right? He is in the DSL, very young guy. He's the centerpiece of their international class this year. Had a remarkable finish until like his final game. He just had a home run, hit for the cycle, got a double in his last at bat to complete the cycle. Hit his first pro home run, I believe, in that game as well. I believe. But Ryan Mitchell, the second round pick, I believe, is the other guy. So closer, had the Georgia Tech commit, and then he is from Memphis. He's from Memphis. And he's a really interesting talent too. I think you're right. I'm glad you brought up Baez because, like, you know, it'll be a real. It's going to take patience, and he's I know Cardinal fans hate that word because it's been, because it's just been trodden through the ringer and now become a meme, like so many other things. But it'll be interesting to see what he does in AAA. And to compare what the Cardinals do with him there versus what Walker encountered. You're talking about two large individuals, obviously very athletic. Walker has great speed. Baez has a willingness to steal that is different, like you mentioned. And just the development of those two, obviously Jordan's initial ability and real strong success early on kind of fast-tracked his development and arrival in the majors, where he's had to do a lot of changes and explore a lot of things at the highest level as a hitter. And the Cardinals haven't seen him flourish as a result of that. Whereas Baez has been more of the slow burn, right? His development has been on the way up, and where that meets there in AAA will be really interesting to see if Baez taking that route becomes the player that the Cardinals hoped and wonder if Jordan would be or would have been if he had more time in AAA when he arrived in the majors. I don't know. There's a real comparison to be had there. But the impact players are necessary. But what will separate the Cardinals from just being the Pirates in the perpetual retooling or this 6-year cycle situation is spending on top of it. That seems to be what you have to make that final push by spending. To you can have the homegrown space shuttle, but you gotta have the spending to provide the booster rockets so that it gets out of the atmosphere and breaks free of the orbit of merely contending and does something spectacular.
But first, let's get back to
you. Like that analogy?
No, I do. I do. It's you should. I think people wish the ownership would hear that pitch. And you tried to present it in many different formats. This is a familiar topic for Derek Gould. You would hope they would receive the message from any of the various ways that you present it. And even go back a year ago, I thought under the circumstances, the money they spent was pretty smart. They went out and got a couple one-year pitchers who held up okay. Gave them exactly what they wanted with the innings, and Gray gave them more than that. And he was
absolutely
more than that, and he was more than that this year. So you can do that. In 1 year, people say this is going to take 6 years. Only if you choose to make it go 6 years. There's no need for this to take 6 years, particularly when you got a bunch of guys who can play the game. I mean, the flip side is the Pirates, they've got guys that they're using who unfortunately cannot play the game. They look at the collective failure of their offense for so much of the season. They're running guys out that were sub-replacement level. So you at least don't have that problem here.
Yeah.
It's a starting point, but yeah, it's still a long way from what you're talking about. A dynamic team that can truly be in the chase and be respected as such by opponents and your fans.
So to bend it back, and because, the crowds for the Cardinals against the Pirates, some of them really felt like the Cardinals visiting the Pirates, just to be frank. I've talked to executives with other teams this year, and you know, one of the things they talk about small markets is, you know, how, you know, they do live in the cycles of realizing, all right, how do we maximize the team when we have this homegrown core, and how do we outfit it when everything strikes and you have to do a bit of quality or quantity to find quality to do that, knowing that when the players kind of get out of their 6 years of control, they're, and if they're really good, they're likely to go elsewhere, right? If you're a small market team, you know, that the Buck, Byron Buxtons and et cetera, those are rare. But how, what do you do then? And in each of the conversations I've had with them, I've also talked with them about, like, yeah, but where does that leave fans, Jeff? If fans are sold, this is our team for this year, and next year we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a few of the guys remain, but then we'll have a whole new team, and you have this churn of players. There seems to be two ways for teams to go, and it's really hard for them to sell, well, love the laundry. You know, come love the laundry. Come love the jerseys and trust that we'll put players in it. But know that the star that you fell in love with, the personalized jersey that you bought, the jersey that you got with his name and number on it, well, that might be outdated in 3 years because he might be a Yankee, right? Or he might be a Dodger, or he might be off with the Padres. That it gets really hard for fans to attach themselves to individual players. And so teams have to market themselves as entities, as laundry. The Cardinals could do that, right? Like you talked about, the Cardinals, you can market around their history. They need to do maybe less of that. They can market around their brand. They have a great logo. They have all that stuff. They obviously are entrenched. They could do all those things, and they could sell that special feel if they can reclaim it, Jeff, that you talk about. Well, could they promote? Do you think the St. Louis market would respond if they promoted prospects? If they use prospects in marketing, so that they are stars when they arrive? You know, Paul Skeens, obviously, an obvious one that the Pirates could build marketing around even before he got to the majors. 1-1 overall pick, he was expected to move fast. You know, could the Cardinals do that with J.J. Weatherholt this winter? Would fans respond to that? Could they do that for Doyle? Would fans respond to that? And in doing that, could they get 8 years of promotion, 8 years of fans going, man, we own this guy. We love this guy. This is our guy. We're wearing his jersey. And it feel longer than if it's just the six or five before he goes elsewhere?
Well, yeah, two things. One, I think they'll have no choice but to sell the future. They're going to have to. If they don't, then they're just stupid. This is what, you know, and now the cynic will say, well, yeah, sell the future. It takes pressure off you to actually win. You're selling hope and not a reality. But to a degree, they have no choice. They have to try to sell hope because their hope is a little more exciting than their reality right now. The other thing is, and we talk about this all the time, if you think Weatherholt's the guy, you know what? Sign the guy. Buy a year of his free agency. Mm. You know, put in accelerators or put in options at the end of that thing that give you a chance to keep him what would be his free agency. Do it. Guy like Wynn. I mean, the worst you got is one of the elite fielders in baseball. You're not sure about his ceiling offensively, if he can reach it. Kid's got an attitude, which I think is good. You know what? Mm-hmm. Maybe sometime you might want to think about, to your point, we're committing to these guys. This is the future. We're selling hope. We're also committing to it. We're not just going to wheel this guy when he gets to arbitration year two because he's too expensive. And now you're keeping guys for a much shorter time if that's going to be your outlook. So, or even arbitration year one. So you've got to find, sell hope. I think you can do it, but you got to commit to it. You got to be good at it. And it's going to take some time. And that is one route you can take. And the difference between this franchise and so many others is, though, that one, the fans got used to success and you got used to having fans. So how does a franchise that's used to having fans deal with the fact that stadium's empty? And how do the fans react to the fact that the team's not successful every year? This is different than these other teams. These other teams can play the cycle game because, you know what? The Tigers went 10, 15 years without being relevant. Royals, same deal. Orioles, same deal. Yeah, people got used to it. Here, they're not used to it, and the team's not used to it. The owners aren't used to it, and the fans aren't used to it. They're in the same place. you know, the owners want the fans back. The fans want their baseball back. So what's going to happen here, people?
It's a great question, Jeff. I really think you've hit on several things, and I look forward to you reading, like turning this podcast into some of the thoughts you've brought up, and even the phrasing of it, you know, from what the Cardinals had when it was special and how it was definitely a symbiotic relationship, fans investing in it. And then just what you just said now, you know, I mean, the fans got used to success. The Cardinals got used to having fans. Did both of the sides take that for granted? And is that what leads to this?
Yeah, and how do you motivate both sides, right? I mean, the fans will send a message, and that should be a motivator. But you can't use that as an excuse to go even worse, to go even further back. You know, it's like a restaurant, like, oh, you know, our tenant, we're not selling as much food, so we're just have to cut down on our food cost. That's not going to work, man.
Wow.
Because your fans are
right.
You know, this restaurant was used to having serving good food and having a lot of people here. And we could serve okay food and maybe turn a profit with, you know, a third of the place being full, I guess. Is that what you want? Well, it's decision time, people, you know, and really it's on the Cardinals to make the decision. The fans are going to react to, you know, at the end of the day, are going to react to what the team does.
It's called menu efficiency. That's what it's called, right? Menu efficiency, the restaurant equivalent of payroll efficiency. Now that is hard to sell. That is not a marketing campaign that they want. You're much better off selling history, selling future, promoting prospects, finding a star to build a marketing campaign around. But, you know, gosh, dog, the commercials, you know, where they're showing, you know, charts and graphs about how efficient the payroll is, that's not going to move a whole lot of needles.
No, probably not.
That's Jeff Gordon, sports columnist and author of Tip Sheet at STLToday.com. You can find all of his work in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and STLToday.com. The best podcast in baseball, brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, is available wherever you get your podcasts. It is also part of the constant Cardinals coverage here at STLToday.com and at the Post-Dispatch. Jeff, thank you very much for joining me. For Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball. We'll talk to you soon. Excellent. Superb. I hope you were writing all that down.
Yeah, it's funny because it's you feel better after having one of those rants because it's just so exasperating to go to that park and see it in that condition. It's just sad. It's not my – I mean, I'm not a shareholder in the team or anything, but it's just – you know, it was fun being around a franchise that was special. It's just – you know, we're lucky to be in a sports town where that happened.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see this – you know, we've had some darker times as a sports community, but I'd hate to see it go that way in baseball, though, because that's just, you know, there goes 6 months of your life every year that's just not very much fun.
It's a great point, Jeff. It's a great point.